time is 1:40 and the date is the 22nd of March 1983. The place is room 124 of the Judiciary Hearing Room in the Capitol located at Juneau, Alaska. Present for the Judiciary Hearing today are all members of the committee with exception of Representative Malone and Representative Winty. Matters at issue this hour are sponsor substitute for House Bill 58, an act requiring certain prisoners to serve a full sentence. This bill has had a great deal of debate in the committee already, the testimony in the committee already, and at the time we terminated the last hearing in which this bill was involved, we'd asked Representative Riska and Representative Clarkson to address some of the questions that had arisen at the time of that hearing. And it has resulted in a committee substitute which we asked them to draft, and each of the packets contain a copy of the committee substitute. If there's someone present who wishes a copy of it, there are copies at the door of the committee substitute. Would either Representative Riska or Representative Clarkson or both like to address the committee substitute and the changes? If not, I'll read what counsel has found of them. Representative Clarkson?
I have we just prepared a real short thing which does describe the changes, and I'll run through them. Because of the speeded up time frame in this, I am going to propose a couple of changes even from what you have in front of you, and those are based on review by the Department of Law. So let me just say generally, I think what Representative Liska and I tried to accomplish with the proposed committee substitute, and then go through it section by section. Two of the concerns that were expressed during the testimony or after the testimony and the discussion on this bill were that, first of all, there were situations in which the judge had the authority to decide on treatment, and there are situations where the Division of Corrections had the authority to decide on treatment. And there was, I believe, no desire of the committee to alter that basic framework. And so the committee substitute reflects the existing framework for who decides in what cases. The second defect we found in the House bill was that it addressed only the circumstance, or attempted to address only the circumstance, where a person was actually incarcerated. And it was the feeling, at least in the subcommittee, that we wanted to also address the refusal to cooperate with treatment where the person was not incarcerated, was basically on a suspended sentence with a requirement that they go through a treatment program. So it's those two specific problems that we addressed. Addressing the little outline of the changes, you can see that the basic thrust of the legislation is the denial of parole or furlough, and that relates to the person who is incarcerated. They're in jail. If they refuse to participate in those types of treatment that are described, they may not be paroled and they may not be furloughed. Those two sections are sections 7 and 8 of the proposed committee substitute. The second section on revocation of suspension of sentence is basically those circumstances where the person is going to be released into the community on the condition that he or she do something. In those sections, and those are sections 2, 3, and 5, the judge can impose that kind of treatment as a condition of probation. And probation is sort of the overall word for what we do when we release somebody to the community on a condition that they do something with a suspended sentence. And then section 6, which clarifies the revoking of a suspended sentence, and it should be the suspended sentence will be revoked if the person refuses to participate in treatment that's required by the judge. Now, you'll notice that this outline excludes two sections of the bill, and that's because this morning we discussed this with the Department of Law, and they have made some arguments that I think are strong arguments for deleting two sections of the proposed committee substitute. The first of those, Mr. Chairman, if you'll look on the committee substitute, page 1, section 1, which is language inserted in 1255.015A. 015 is the general section authorizing a judge to impose a sentence. It is not a section which provides for revocation of that sentence. The argument of the Department of Law is you don't want to put in subsection 9 talking about revoking a suspended sentence when that's not what the section refers to. So, my proposal is to delete section 1. It is not necessary, does not reduce the effectiveness of the legislation. It's just sticking an amendment in the wrong section.
Yeah, the original sponsor had put it in 33, right? And originally it was in Title 33.
Right, right. Title 33 is for the incarcerated prisoner. All the stuff in Title 12 is for a person who is released into the community. The second proposed change, Mr. Chairman, on page 2, starting on line 12, section 4, the language there amends section 088, which relates to the court's authority to revoke a suspended sentence. The problem with it is that the legal people say that in effect we will be imposing double jeopardy. And let me give you an example to show you how that would occur. This is page 2, line 12, starting section 4. If a judge gave a sentence which is 1 year in jail, 2 years suspended, and at the end of the 1 year, the judge decided 1 year wasn't enough, I'm going to give him another year. That's double jeopardy. And it's probably unconstitutional because he's received a sentence twice for the same offense.
Well, except if this becomes part of the sentence so stated in here if he violates.
That's right. It is a close call legally.
Yeah.
Right? But the judgment to delete it is based not only on the fact that it's arguably double jeopardy, but secondly because it's not necessary. And the reason for that is you do exactly the same thing in section 110. You're doing exactly the same thing in section 110. That is, you're giving the judge authority to revoke a sentence, but you're doing it in the section that allows revoking a sentence rather than extending a suspended sentence.
Yeah. 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 Why do they think that this would be double jeopardy? I understand what your example, of course, mm-hmm. that would be. But I don't understand why they think that this would be extended into the double jeopardy category. I don't disagree with you. Maybe it's no real reason. I don't disagree. I'm just curious about their reasons.
I'm getting all this secondhand. Maybe it'd be appropriate to ask my AG Ann Rice, who talked to the Department of Law about it, to explain it more. Let me emphasize that any time it's a close call and we don't need the section,
Well,
I just soon drop
agree.
It out because we accomplish the same purpose. But maybe Jan can.
Well, let's look at one table and see if on the surface it looks like it says exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Really,
Jan, since we are recording electronically, if you put your name for the record so we know who's speaking, and then if you'd like to comment, we'd like to hear.
Sure. For the record, I'm Jan Rice. I'm legislative aide for Representative Don Cloxton. Section 4 refers to AS 1255-088, and the title of that particular section is Modification of Sentence. And the purpose of that section is to modify a sentence when the conditions of the probation have not been violated, but the judge usually wants to lessen the sentence, make it less severe. And in that particular case, there has been no violation of any of the conditions of probation. in that particular section, if you insert a sentence which talks about revocation, it's one bad bill drafting. It's not appropriate. It's not a place where you talk about revocation. It's a place where you talk about modification. And second, if you put in a sentence like that, it may be assumed that you can modify or revoke a sentence when in fact someone did not violate the conditions of the sentence. And that brings in the double jeopardy argument. You can't impose a sentence twice when the fella hasn't ever violated the sentence. You can't change the sentence in the middle of the sentence when the person hasn't violated the sentence or none of the conditions have changed. And that's what you talk about when you say double jeopardy. When you get halfway through the sentence and the judge says, I changed my mind, I'm going to sentence you again, that's double jeopardy. You can change a sentence if the guy, one, violates the conditions of the probation, because that's a whole new circumstance. Or two, if the judge wants to lessen the sentence, nobody's going to complain, particularly not the defendant, if you want to change a sentence and make it less severe. That, I suppose, could be technically double jeopardy, but no one would complain about that.
Well, if I may ask you, then, are they telling you that if this stayed in, for example, if a judge had an opportunity to modify a sentence by this word revoke, that he might change his mind and not modify it to a lesser, but instead revoke without cause? This it seems to me the sentence would say that he could only revoke if he had refused the offer. So how does it get over into the double jeopardy? How does it jump the sentence into the double jeopardy category? My question.
Well, I think you're right. The sentence technically says they won't revoke unless, in fact, you do violate the sentence, but they're afraid that by virtue of putting it in the subsection called modification, you're implying that there was no violation of the sentence, and they're just saying that it's inappropriate to put it there. You might have double jeopardy. A judge may revoke the sentence when, in fact, the person hasn't done anything, just by virtue of the title of that particular section, modification and revocation.
I think I would agree with Richard Clarkson that we don't need it, why let it go, but
you accomplish the same purpose in one tent.
I certainly question their reasoning. I just cannot see any judge, and I know them all, saying, let's see, under this section of modification, oh, it says I can revoke without cause, when the sentence about revoking says only if he refuses the decision. So I think their reasoning is spurious.
I think you're correct. I think it has more to say about the bill drafting and quality of it than the actual double jeopardy issue. But it is explicitly contained in section 110.
Actually, the reasons are exactly the same, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are, right.
It certainly wouldn't harm the bill if it's deleted.
The third proposed change, Mr. Chairman, on page 3, starting on line 7 of the proposed committee substitute, again, we're trying to balance the authority of the judge versus the authority of the Division of Corrections. And after talking to the Department of Law, who agrees, by the way, with this committee's position on whether we should mess around with that, there is some proposed new language, and let me give it to you, and then you'll have to look at it. But it's 20 words or so. So if you wouldn't mind, on page or on line 7, delete the word available, and then on line 8, delete the new language starting on by required, and add the following: recommended by the sentencing court. And made available by the Division of Corrections. Or determined appropriate and made available by the Division of Corrections. So that the sentence, the underlying language, the new language in section 080 would read as follows: and the prisoner has not refused alcohol, drug, sex offender, or other mental health treatment recommended by the sentencing court and made available by the Division of Corrections, or determined appropriate and made available by the Division of Corrections. And the reason for that, again, is to take into account two circumstances. One, where the court says, he's going to jail, but I think he needs sex offender treatment. That's one situation. The second situation is, I don't care what he gets, I'm sending him to jail. Corrections, you decide whether he needs sex offender treatment. It covers both of those circumstances and says that in either of those circumstances, if he doesn't cooperate in the treatment, he's not getting parole.
If it's available.
Right. If it's available, right. The available language is
that's important.
That's right. That's right.
Don, and you got made available twice in there. Is that good English?
Well,
you have
it's sort of tortured, but again, it needs to be to take into account those two situations. One where the judge makes a recommendation, and the other where the judge doesn't.
Determined appropriate is when the corrections.
That's right. That's right. The judge doesn't say anything about it, but corrections decides that this guy needs whatever.
Today, Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, having not seen this committee substitute before now, perhaps it's my fault I have not, but I don't believe this committee substitute does what the original bill started out to do, because it talks a lot about sentencing, suspension of sentence and probation, and it talks about noticing grounds for revocation. But the bill started out in a different section of the law entirely, and the only time 3330 is used, or 33, section 33 is used, is on the back page, and that talks about granting a parole. The section dealing with service of a full sentence is not in here, unless I'm missing something. I'm finding probation, parole, suspension of sentence, all those things, but no language that speaks to serving a full sentence.
Again, let me just respond to that a little bit. There are three circumstances under which a person does not now serve his full sentence. One is good time. And this committee, I thought, discussed and agreed that we shouldn't change the good time provisions. Two is parole. Three is furlough. So we're saying under the two of the three circumstances where you get something less than a full sentence, you're not gonna if you don't cooperate. It seems to me that does accomplish the purpose of the sponsor.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I respectfully disagree, and the reason why I respectfully disagree is this. You're talking about a different element as laid out in the original bill, and the different element having nothing to do with probation, suspension of parole, etc. It had to do with a person that is incarcerated refusing to take treatment that the judge had ordered as part of the sentence, and that person then being released on society. And we had a case in point to that, and in my opinion, as supportive as it may be, I have looked at this sponsor substitute, perhaps I'm missing something, and I don't believe it takes into account the intent of the original bill.
If you go down the section by section, and you try to compare that to the original bill, perhaps I should run through this and then you show me where I'm missing anything that's required in it.
Gentlemen, I think what you're talking about, I think, is this section 1 where they had 9 for 12-55-016A, that Mr. Buckley said that I believe the Department of Law said could be unnecessary. That does say provide for a sentence to be full, but that's the part that Foxman suggested could be deleted without loss of the bill. Nowhere else does it use the word sentence to serve in full, except in that section 1 on page 1.
I
assume that Mr. Buckley is speaking to the bill without that section in it, perhaps.
I didn't like it. I think it needs to be in there.
That was not the section that was in the past, because they left the whole
thing. Well, he said that that whole section would be removed.
I didn't bracket that section because I think it is an essential part of the bill. I bracketed D on page 2, and of course tried to write the new language out. So as we look at the section analysis, that nearly has to be there. If you do take that out, it does in fact pretty much negate the sponsor's intent on the bill. Yeah, it would also, you're right, the title would not apply to the bill if we took that out either. I did speak at length with the sponsor about this, about the committee substitute as written. And it's my feeling, and I think it's his, and I think I can represent his feeling that, that he definitely, you know, that's a part of the bill.
Yeah, I think on the, you're talking about section one?
Yeah, if we took the, in section one, you know, I, like when you said to bracket it, I didn't bracket it because I don't think you can take that out of the bill that we're in the process.
Certainly, obviously the judgment of the committee, the only reason to take it out is it's a section providing for what the sentence is going to be as opposed to what the penalty is for, I mean, what the judge can do to revoke a sentence, and it's just for drafting reasons, I think that I'd go out, but I mean, obviously it made the first two or three cuts in this draft because it appeared in there, so I'm not going to do it.
Is the mood in the committee the same as Brian then, that on page two, on beginning on line 13, during the inclusive of 16, if that language is again represented again on line 23 through 26, and that can be removed from the bill? Line 12. Take out section 4. Does anybody have any objection to that?
No.
Being as language is, and again, so stated in another chapter on the bill. And the extension of language on page 3 that's been suggested, removing the word available on line 7, and on line 8, adding the language recommended by the sentencing court and made available, and I didn't get the rest of it. I presume you have that in writing. So you can, is that offensive to anyone on the committee? That's merely an expansion of language that already exists. It seems to be somewhat consistent with the stuff in on the notice of grounds for revocation too. We need to get that in some kind of written form.
Yeah, I can
distribute it to the committee.
Do you want to do it that way, or it might be, considering the fact this CS wasn't distributed to anyone until this morning, or maybe late this morning. Do you want to wait till the next meeting to move it, or do you want to move? What's
no,
your
I just assume clear it up, take out four. If there's no philosophical disagreement from the other members of the committee, I think I can speak for the sponsor. Sponsor's aid is here, and there's probably no further problem with the bill. I'd like that language, it's clear those are for just removing one and actually have one language change in the bill.
Okay.
That's not objectionable to me.
I just have it written on my copy. Maybe if I read it again slowly, we'd accomplish what you... Is that all right?
I've got recommended by the sentencing court and made available by...
The Division of Corrections.
The Division of Corrections.
Or determined appropriate and made available by the Division of Corrections. And of course, they've created a Department of Corrections that is conforming amendments can be made.
Right, and we would strike then the word available from line 7, bracket required by the Division of Corrections on line 8,
mm-hmm.
and insert in its place that language.
Right.
when you say that that right there, addressing and quoted up in term of containers in prison, on 4, 3, 5, 4. City plan is no, it's not going to have 33-4 on an imposed definite term of containers in prison. Mr. Chairman, I believe under 1255.015, if you look at the statute, we got 1, 2, we got 8 subparagraphs, 4 impose a definite term of continuous imprisonment. It may have been what Representative Clark was trying to put in here when he wrote this, rewrote this section. Impose a definite term of continuous imprisonment. What the question was, we're not referring to 33 as what the status of the bill, original bill, addressing already imprisoned. And what Representative Clark is doing here is imposing also what brought this to screeching halt the first time was. It didn't address the parolees or so forth to say that they would continue undergoing the program. These added that on to it, with additional. Once a subject is parole, is that they will continue these rehab programs, otherwise, they violate the parole. But,
I understand.
They're trying to address the ones that are already in prison now to serve the full term. That's the question. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I need a motion to adopt the committee substitute if there are no further philosophical disagreements with it. And following that, then a motion for a language change. Representative Malone.
Chairman, I move that we adopt the draft CS as a working draft of the original bill.
And ask unanimous consent?
Ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There being none, the committee then has before a committee substitute for House for sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 in its drafted form. And it's the only draft we got, so I don't think we need to further designate it. Is there further discussion on it in its form before we ask for amendments? If not, Representative Clarkson, will you move the amendments?
You not want me to move the deletion of Section 1?
No, I don't want you to move the deletion of Section 1.
On page 2, Mr. Chairman, starting on line 4, I move that we delete section 4.
On line 12.
Sorry, line 12, right. I don't know what I said. But page 2, line 12, move we delete section 4 from line 12 through line 16 and a half.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll delete section 4, page 2. Beginning line 12 through line 16.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3, starting on line 7, I guess I would move an amendment that we've now read a couple, three times. Do you want me to read it again?
Sure.
Sure. Representative Hayes?
Can you have the, new language read
in context?
In context, yeah, starting with the welfare of society and
with the welfare of society. And the prisoner has not refused alcohol, drug, sex offender, or other mental health treatment recommended by the sentencing court and made available by the Division of Corrections, or determined appropriate and made available by the Division of Corrections.
No, I don't think so.
just was going through about how this stuff is made available, and maybe with the fact that the legal correction works in the law, or some other department really has nothing to do with whether it's done contractually or however. I just want to make my own mind clear that there's no way that this service could be provided by somebody not available, therefore, way out for the guy. If that should be handled contractually anyway, then it would have absolutely no bearing on it at all.
Yeah, that's the way that sex offender treatment, in fact, is provided now, is by contract with the Division of Corrections.
So this language would cover that in total.
Couldn't be provided without the business sessions being aware and actually arranging for it.
That's right. Dorothy, do you have those changes?
Yes.
But I presume that I'll accept that last language in the form of a motion then, and I assume you asked unanimous consent.
Unanimous consent is requested.
Is there objection? There being none, the amendment to page 3 will be made as described. I can read it all if you'd like it read again. All right, I'll now accept the motion to move the committee substitute for sponsor subject House Bill 58 from the committee room and leave the recommendations in that way. Representative Miska?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill number 58, Judiciary, and that's for individual recommendations.
The unanimous consent. Is there objection? There being none, we will move committee substitute for House Bill 58 from the committee. With the individual recommendation, we'll put that together and possibly boot that and as amended.
That's right, as amended.
This, we need to try real hard to get one of those things on the board up there in the house that's too long for one shot.
Right, we'll get one near the end of the session. We'll start to get pretty long. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clarkson.
Can I just make a short pitch now that we've moved this bill? The bill has been drafted, of course, not to require additional treatment programs, and that was important to keep the fiscal note. Let me just make a pitch for those programs. You, who are in the majority, I think, are now starting to see the relationship of those programs to people getting out on the streets, and I just encourage you. Speak with members who are on the Finance Committee and support substantial increases in sex offender treatment and some changes in the way alcoholism treatment is provided in institutions, because we don't have enough of that now.
Well, I guess once once the new Department of Corrections gets online and gets all streamed out, and it's youth corrections and it's adult corrections and it's parole board and everything, it'll be easier to monitor and audit those functions and see to it that they're working and not working and add and detract where necessary and hopefully accomplish the goals of rolling the numbers of prison beds required backwards.
If they just don't get wrapped up in spending too much time on youth corrections.
Representative Malone?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed we have the committee report in circulation here, and as far as I know, we don't have the final language of the bill, although we've agreed on it in prepared form. And I would think, unless there's some particular urgency on a piece of legislation, that it's really a good practice to have a bill that's more than one page long to have the final draft of the language before we actually sign the report. It's sort of an extra safeguard. Now, this particular bill, I don't know if it goes to, does it go to another committee after this year?
I think it has to be
goes to another committee, but even more so in the cases where where the bill does not. No, I would suggest that as a policy.
It's interesting, Mr. Chairman, that the person who worked on a committee substitute put a no record.
Gets so used to writing that by the morning. Well, I have to teach.
My dedication to good legislation or complete, accurate legislation, regardless of whether I agree with the principles.
It's not good, though. Is that what you're saying? Maybe I better put a do not pass.
No, I'm sorry. It would have been do not pass if it wasn't in good shape. I actually, one of the reasons is still a section one. I haven't quite sorted out whether that's going to create more confusion than clarity. It's one reason for a no record.
So having dispensed with this for the moment, Mr. Defiles, and the next item on the regular schedule today is House Bill 212, which is an act relating to crime victim compensation and providing for an effective date. The sponsor and co-sponsor of another are Representative Pester and Representative Coxon. Representative Pester has let me know that Representative Coxon will speak for him with regard to the bill. We do have a person signed on the witness sheet that would like to make a statement regarding to the bill. And it's just Nola Kapp. And at this time, Nola, if you'd come to the table with us. And, since we are recording electronically, I have to ask you to state your name for the record and proceed in a manner such as you will. Representative Clarkson.
Can I ask either before or as she's testifying, the material you have there that I put together for the committee could be distributed?
Certainly.
I'm Nola Kapp, and I'm the administrator of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board for the state of Alaska. One thing today I did through a bill analysis, I had turned that into Department of Public Safety, where I have to, and you'll notice it hasn't been signed, because I don't know what happened to it. I have my copy, but I don't see none of you had a bill analysis.
Not prepared, I don't believe, by the department.
So this is mine, and we did get the fiscal notes, so I assume the position paper is all right for the commissioner. It just didn't get sent over.
But for whatever reason, do you,
you
have
reason.
Any objection to the copy of what you have? And
no, sir.
Copy what? Oh, it's in here.
Yes.
This is, we do have.
She delivered it today.
It's this piece of paper in each of your packets.
Yeah.
The Violent Crime Compensation Board does support the this bill. I don't know if you want me to read it or if you just want me to.
Certainly, if you'd go through it, then.
You want me to go through it? This bill would add a new paragraph which would enable the board to pay the provider directly for services provided as a result of the personal injury or death of the victim. The board would really like to see this because right now we have to provide a joint warrant to the hospital and to the claimant. Our statute doesn't give us any latitude in providing payment to the hospital directly or to the hospital, to the doctor directly. We have to do it in a joint warrant. This doesn't cause a problem every time, but there are times when the claimant forgets to send the, forgets to sign the joint warrant and does not get it to the hospital or to the doctor. And there's nothing that we can do about it when the provider calls us, even though an award has been made. There are many times, sometimes it's they've moved out of state, sometimes I don't know the reasons. But the doctor at the hospital does not get paid because of the joint warrant. If we could, if the board decides to make an award and decides they're an innocent victim, and at that point the board could just write a letter to the claimant and say, we are paying the doctor bill of such and such. And it would make it better for the providers and better for us. The bill also provides a new paragraph which would enable the board to deny a claim if the claimant refuses to give reasonable cooperation to law enforcement in the efforts to apprehend and convict the offender for the crime resulting in a personal injury unless good cause for the refusal is shown the board. The board does support this. They do feel that there are a few cases where the claimant is justifying and fearing contribution from the offender, but for the most part, and this is in the language where at the in the discretion of the board. So then we support that. The bill would also repeal the section of the act which now excludes relatives and victims living with the offender. The board supports repealing this for several reasons. The board has felt that many of the people living in the rural areas or in the bush areas are not included because they're living in the same residence of the offender, and many times that has to do with housing constraints and not because they really particularly want to live in the same household. This repeal would also mean that innocent dependent children could receive loss of support when, for example, one spouse kills the other one and the child is left homeless, or children are left homeless, and we have had actual cases. These are two cases. The other thing that the bill would delete the sentence, all payments must be made in a lump sum. The board supports the deletion of the lump sum if they feel that long-term payments would ensure the award is not exhausted before the dependent reaches majority or before the claimant is able to return to work. And then the last thing would be a new paragraph in this bill is added stating a person awarded compensation is eligible for subsequent compensation for additional personal injuries inflicted by the same offender if the offender is a relative or a member of the same household. This would keep the offender from benefiting from the actions and speaks to concern of this.
Okay, Foxy.
I missed when you started out. The commissioner's signature is not on this.
What was yours?
You ran out of time?
No. I turned this in on February 22nd, but it has to go through the Department of Public Safety and then on to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just brought to my attention when I came in here that you did not have a copy of the bill analysis, but you did have a fiscal note.
Right.
So I think it was just an error in public safety or somehow.
Okay, but this hasn't been approved by the commission, this position, for bill on
that. My copy of it has not.
Well, what I would guess is because the block titled fiscal note attached is checked, I would guess that the signer in the fiscal note approves the letter. If that wasn't done, I'd somewhat agree that maybe the absence of the signature on here was, had some credence, but...
I don't have any idea of why you didn't have.
Well, let me, if I can go ahead.
Go ahead.
Has the Violent Crime Compensation Board met on this issue this year? I know they did for earlier legislation a year or two ago. Have they met on it recently?
Yes, in fact, it was, we had a board meeting the end of January, the 29th to 30th of January, to discuss the upcoming legislation.
Are there new members to the Violent Crime Compensation Board since last year?
Since last session, I don't believe, maybe Carol Eastar is on the board now, I don't know if she was on the board. Seems like she's been on the board over a year ago.
Well, my concern is specifically with, and of course I haven't had a chance to testify yet, but basically the difference between my bill, House Bill 104, and this bill is the provision in 212, starting on line 27 of page 1, which is the requirement of cooperation with law enforcement officials. The position of the Violent Crime Compensation Board a year ago on this legislation was in opposition to that provision. And I'm wondering if there's been a change in position, or whether the issue came up at all in your meeting, or what. Did they discuss that specific portion?
Was that in your last year?
Well, that's the problem. We had two or three different bills, and that's why I wondered whether you discussed this one particularly.
They did discuss the fact that the applicant should cooperate with law enforcement, and they actually do that now, although it is not in the statute. But they would like to leave some kind of either good cause or discretion, give them a little latitude in the very few cases where they really feel it's justified that the claimant is afraid of retribution from the offender.
Right. If, Mr. Chairman, if you people could look at the second page of the packet I have provided to the committee, it's a position paper on a similar bill on this issue last year. And the two primary paragraphs of that position paper state opposition to language requiring cooperation and prohibiting recovery if there is no cooperation, and goes on to explain just what Ms. Kappa just said, that the board presently has discretion to deny claims, doesn't believe there should be a blanket exclusion, and is satisfied with its existing authority to require cooperation in prosecuting the offender. So at least a year ago, the position of the board was in opposition to language similar to that on the bottom of page 1.
I don't have last year's bill, and I don't know if it had anything about good cause or discretion in it, or whether it was just a blanket statement that they had to cooperate.
Well, I don't have the other old bill either. And there were some changes, I admit that, but if the committee will just take a look at those two paragraphs when we get to the point of acting on the bill, that will be one of the issues that I'll raise. Another question on the fiscal note. Last year, and the committee may want to refer to the packet again, and the last page in that packet, which is a memorandum from me to the chairman indicating that I felt the fiscal note was too high. Last year, this same very, very similar bill produced a fiscal note for $199,800. The fiscal note this year is $333,600 per FY84. That's based on, apparently, on your claim that the number of cases will be 50 more cases, and that there will be an increase in board meetings, an increase in the need for staff, an additional clerk typist, equipment purchases, an IBM display writer, all because of the, plus some TV spots, production of TV spots, and so on. Are all of those related just to the to this legislation, or is that because you've had underfunding problems in the past?
We have always had underfunding problems because we still have the same type of funding that was started 10 years ago when the board, when the statute was enacted. The number of claims keeps increasing each year. There are still only two members. There's myself and May 8th. And they are, that's basically what we've had all along. We are continuing to increase. When you open, this bill is going to open the door of, to a new class of people and the new class of victims. I feel that we were conservative in estimating that there'd be an increase of 50 claims. There may be a lot more. Out of those 50 claims, we, as you can see, we said that probably 26 would be awarded. There is no way, we are going to have to do some advertising. I think it's only fair to do some advertising because a great deal of the statute is being changed by this when you add a new class of people. And I think you are going to have to, you will note that that's a one-time expense on the TV spots and on radios and newspapers, but it's something that we are going to have to get out to the public to make them aware of. I think that's part of our duty.
Have much problem with the TV.
The clerk type is three is we're not keeping up now. We used to be able to process a claim if we could get all the information within 3 months. We are now up to it taking 6 months. We open a two new class of people with 50 new claims, and it's going to take us a year. We are again penalizing the victim.
Why did it take you 6 months to prosecute this claim?
Okay, well, first of all, there are, we have to get the police report, we have to get documentation from the hospitals, from the doctors, employers' statements. All of that has to go into a packet before it's presented to the board. We don't always get immediate response from, one, the claimant, to the doctor. The hospitals are very good about giving stuff back to us. Sometimes the employer doesn't want to write to us or doesn't want to fill out our form. At this point, we have when you have a very few claims, you can run around and get a lot of the stuff yourself. As we get more and more claims, we're less able to do that, and it does take longer because you have to write letters. And
there's any below?
Thank you, Chairman. I probably should be better prepared in the legislation, but approximately how many claims a year does the board deal with?
Okay, right now, last year we had 129 claims the year before, 111 the year before, 98. It keeps increasing. This year we have 115 claims today. We anticipate that we'll have between 140 and 150 claims by June 30th.
So you're saying that this then is going to be
50 out of 150.
50, yeah, that's going to be a substantial increase, 30% increase.
In this map, I know you probably don't have the figures in front of you, but would you have any idea how many of these claims you're getting? Are they a result of automobile accidents? Are they shooting incidents? Or, you know, if we were, the reason why I ask you this question, we have a bill coming before the House of the legislature this time, the result of liability and automobile insurance. Injuries as a result of people having insurance mandatory would be covered instead of states having to pick up the tab. So could you give us any idea, what, if any, do we have any trend or any percentage-wise if the bill goes into effect on mandatory out-of-bill insurance, which of course will reduce the cost on the state because the individual insurance company will be paying for it, right?
Our statute does not cover any crime with an automobile or a vehicle, a motor vehicle, oh, airplane, boat. Those are totally excluded. The hit and run is excluded. We don't, so none of those are in.
They would not be addressed.
They would not be addressed, no.
Thursday, Foxy?
I just want to finish up on the point on the fiscal note, and this isn't the finance committee, so I'm not sure it's the responsibility of this committee. I do agree with this cap that they don't, you know, that they could probably use some additional funding for their program. I guess as my memo to you indicates, I'm not sure that I want to burden down my bill or Representative Hestinger's bill with an issue that really should be based in the budget. It isn't this change that's going to increase the need for services as much as fiscal note indicates. So that's the only point on that. I don't know whether if the committee moves the bill, whether they want to make a recommendation to the finance committee, or however they want to do it.
They want to tell the finance committee we've got concerns about the fiscal impact, but philosophically, if there's no quarrel with what's contained in the bill, I think we ought to run it up there.
If I can,
go ahead.
If you wouldn't mind, if I haven't had a chance to testify, and that's fine with me since I'm not the prime sponsor, but the history of this bill is that it's been filed for the last 3 years. I originally filed it in 1981. The bill originally simply repealed the two provisions that stopped victims of domestic violence from receiving violent crime compensation. And it was in response to testimony indicating possible abuse of that we eliminated the lump sum payment and eliminated or provided that the payment could be made directly to a vendor. There were problems where you pay the wife so she could pay off her hospital bills. The husband who beat her up and put her in the hospital in the first place could take the check. Didn't want that, so that's why we made it a vendor payment. So some of the protections in here were built in to respond to specific expressions of concern about abuse and fraud. Again, the main thrust of the legislation is to provide assistance for victims of crimes that happen to be living in the same home as the attacker. In one sentence, that's the purpose of the bill.
Could I just say one thing, and sure. Maybe I'm out of line.
No, you're not.
The fiscal note may look like it's a lot of money, but you will consider that most of it is in grant money for the victims, and that money is not touched in any way by administrative costs. The contractual services on the TV spots and all that's the one-time thing to get out to the public. If you pass this without the addition of a clerk typist and without the grant money, it's not going to. Those victims are going to have to wait and wait and wait because we can't serve anymore efficiently.
Representative Lowe?
On the fiscal one here, for fiscal year 84, this for fiscal year 84, talk about that for a minute, this $330,000, $332.6, and under the grants portion of the breakdown shows $287. Now, is that what you estimate to be the incremental cost of this legislation? Is that what your estimate is then?
Yes.
Okay. So you think that over the current funding level that paying these claims would, from where we are right now, at least, we'd roughly double the budget. The grants portion.
No, because what we spent last year, you gave us a supplemental appropriation last year. We've had to request a supplemental each year. And for the 129 claims, we spent $415,000. Now, out of that, there was $1,350,000 requested from the claimants. Out of that amount requested, $415,000 was paid. So the board does screen every one of them. If you look at the FY83 budget or FY82 budget without the fiscal note, it looks like, I mean, without the supplemental, it looks like a lot more than you.
One more question. What was your original budget then if you went to 415 and did your supplemental bring you to 415?
Yes. The FY82 appropriation was $243,300.
So you...
And you approved a supplemental of $248,600.
Which
we didn't
spend.
Well, it's just sort of a follow-up on the thing. This question is, does the board turn down claims or prorate them based on the availability of funds under the type section?
They do not prorate them. They award or deny on the basis of each claim. They, of course, take into consideration amounts of money, but they do study each claim. There were 99 claims awarded and 33 denied out of the 129.
Thank you.
There was any caution? Well, that's an interesting line of thought. I just if I can press you just for a minute on that, when you at the first of the year when you budget heavy, are there more claims approved? Where is there a curve line through this? There's not.
No.
So if you've got down to where you got $5 left in your checking account, you still approve a claim and ask for supplemental?
No, we don't. We're out of money now. We had $265,200.
So how are you processing claims?
We are processing them, but we're not having a board meeting. There will not be a board meeting because the board cannot award money they don't have.
They don't turn them down, they just don't award it. Okay.
It's a catch-up game. Then in July, you have a board meeting and you catch up on the ones that you didn't.
What I was trying to get at.
Yeah, it's a catch-up.
You start cutting down the amounts of money as you come to an end and then just kind of go on. You just keep going and you just kind of build up a deficit account and hope that we settle it someday.
The board doesn't feel that you should be penalized with when the crime occurs.
Sure. Representative Boyle.
Mr. Chairman, in light of that, I mean, we could go further in the fiscal bill, but in the light of this, I think that at least in the grant section of the fiscal note seems to be roughly pretty well justified, so I don't really know whether or not they need an extra person in there. I don't feel qualified to speak, and the rest of it seems to be justified. Yeah, I was just going to say that I don't have any problem with the calculations on the grant portion of the fiscal note. Because obviously if they overestimate, it's money that lapses or whatever. It's the new personnel, new equipment, that sort of thing that I had some trouble with. By the way, this problem of funding with supplementals for pending applications, it's a problem in the catastrophic illness program, too.
It's a huge problem.
It's not unique to this program.
How old is the problem?
Statute was enacted in 1972.
We've got a 10-year-old program.
Always maintenance level from the time it started.
Always had a supplement.
In fact, actually, in 1973, the legislature gave $250,000 for grants. And then when there was a decrease, actually, as you can see in FY82, we were only given $243,000 in grants, although they have increased. I would like to try to justify a clerk typist 3 position. I can run down everything that the two of us do. I can justify the number of hearings. I don't know what to do, but...
That's really a matter for upstairs. It's not really a matter for here. Just as a matter of personal interest to me, we're sure not putting you on trial over that. But as a matter of just personal for me, because I may not attend the Finance Committee here, when was the last time in this 10-year period, or were there more than maybe the last time, when you had major or had increases in office personnel, such as this fiscal note says you're going to do, with additional equipment? Can you remember?
We've never had an additional body.
So it's been that way since the beginning, and this is your first incremental increase?
There was one change. We finally, after 2 years, got the clerk typist 3 upgraded to an AA1, but that's the only change, and that ended up, that took us 2 years.
It sounds to me like you're to be commended for keeping it as low as it has been.
Just 2 people.
Yeah, I can hear that. That comes across strong. Representative Liska?
Chairman, Mr. Kemp, do you have any recommendations as to the amount of the grants? How much grant money are you receiving now for this particular program? Do you have a set grant every year, or is it different?
It's different. This year, in FY82, we received $243,300. In FY83, we received $265,500. We have requested supplementals for the last few years, so it's hard to say. I have an annual report that has all the figures in it. If I could send it to you people, I would. On page 12, it gives all of the figures.
Well, we could copy it here.
We could get a copy of it.
Rather than have you send it, obviously your budget is held
out. And one more question.
That means I'll bring it.
The fertile land effect, I believe you said 1972. We're figuring about a 30% increase for 1984, I believe. I got an increase in payments, in incidents. When the program first started out, was it going steady up, or?
Yes.
Or did we have a lapse in there, or in the past, over the last 3 or 4 years, did we have a big jump in here, or? Could you give us another picture of what we're looking at here?
Okay, I can tell you exactly. As far as in FY73, we received 15 claims, in 74, 50 claims, in 75, 71, in 76, 68, then it jumps in 77 to 93, and then 100, and then in 79 it goes back to 70, and then it's 98, 111, 129, and now we're up to, it started out in 73 with 15 claims. We're now at 129 claims. We have 115 claims today, and we anticipate having 140 claims by June 30th.
From 15 claims to 140 claims?
Yes, sir.
Well, in 10 years, if you put the population of the state in there, that's probably no more than we had in 72. If you looked at the population of the state, well, you had it right there, it would be.
Part of it's education about the program.
Yeah, sure.
So that's just my comment. It's one of the few programs the state has that addresses the victims of violent crime.
It would be my desire to send this on up to Finance, and obviously we can't do it without your concurrence. If you objected, you'll have to get Hayes back down or you don't have to sign it too fast.
Let me just propose a couple of minor amendments.
Is this the trade?
Considering the position of the board the last year, which is that they presently have the discretion to refuse to award violent crime compensation if a person doesn't cooperate, I would urge the deletion of the language in the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2, which requires cooperation and assisting in prosecution, and we can discuss that. Another change that I guess I would propose that may be a little less controversial is the immediate effective date. The first thing that does is, according to the fiscal notes, save us
$120,000 for fiscal year 83. And plus, if you're going to have an educational campaign, it seems to me that you want to have some lead time to get the educational campaign going and not immediately impose the new requirement. I mean, obviously, I think we ought to impose a new requirement for the provision as soon as possible, but immediate effective date may not be as high a priority in this legislation since it can save us some money. So I guess I'd make an argument for deleting Section 7. The other section that troubles me, I guess, is Section 5. Section 5 says that if you, if a person gets put in the hospital because of a domestic assault and receives compensation, they cannot receive any compensation in the future if the offender is a relative or member of the same household. And I guess my only problem with that is it sort of singles out domestic violence victims and says that if they get put in the hospital twice, they don't get a recovery. But if somebody other than a domestic violence victim gets put in the hospital twice, they can. So we're still sort of singling out the domestic violence victim for particular treatment. So those three changes, I would like to see in the legislation. I think the least controversial of those, frankly, is the deletion of Section 7.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have no problem with the deletion of Section 7, but I do with the rest of it.
Yeah, Representative Pestage is not here, but I suspect he would seriously have a problem with the regulation which you learned on the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2. I think it really shouldn't be trying out right for him, but I suspect he wouldn't. I'm not sure that Section 7, if you really wanted to get after this from a constitutional standpoint, is constitutional. Well, how can you single out these people and give it to them once and and not give it to them the next time? I don't know Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to recall some of the discussion and debate that has been held along this vein in the past. And I think it has been generally felt that if a person in a domestic violence situation has succumbed to violence once, and they return and have the same thing happen to them the second time, that if you allow that to continue, it could just be a continuous thing. And that's just from memory of what I remember the debate having been in the past.
If the determination of the committee is to leave in subsection 3, then I guess I would argue even more strongly to delete section 5, since they're sort of designed toward the same end. Right? Subsection 3 says if you're going to get this compensation, you should cooperate in prosecuting this stuff. And once you've done that, it seems to me that if the prosecution is dropped for some other reason, it's not your fault, or he's innocent, or for whatever reason, you did your part, but you, under the circumstances prescribed by Ms. Kapp, you don't have any other housing, or you've got kids, and you make an effort to put your family back together, and in fact, if he puts you in the hospital a second time, despite the fact that you cooperated with law enforcement and everybody, it's just not very fair to deny you assistance that second time. So, again, if we leave subsection 3 in, I would argue that subsection 5 is not as necessary because you've provided the incentive that I think Representative Barnes is concerned about.
I guess on the surface, isn't that what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it's what I said.
Yep. In subsection 5, or section 5 of the bill, where you have where a person's already, is whatever, you've already been maybe awarded compensation by injuries inflicted by offender, if offenders are relatives, same offenders are relatives or members of the same household, the victim. Well, I can see that people might make different living arrangements, but they can't change the fact that the person is a relative. They might have taken all the precautions in the world, and because of the failure on the part of the state to protect members of the society, this individual hurt someone again, member of that family, relative again. And nobody can do anything about the fact that an individual is a relative. We disown them, but that doesn't change the fact. And I wonder if we keep Section 5, that we might at least delete that business about the relative. So it hardly seems fair.
I personally don't really have any problem with reading the whole section myself. I personally don't have any problem with deleting that whole, all of Section 5, period, and leaving the bill as it stands and letting it go by.
Mr. Chairman, any part?
What's your position on Section 7? What's the effective date?
Well,
that's no biggie either way.
No,
it seems to me we say 120,000.
Yeah, it really is.
Give them time to get their publicity campaign together.
But it certainly isn't a big deal. Maybe 90 days one way or the other. We're going to cost.
I'm going to make a motion then, see if we're getting close here. I move that we delete Sections 5 and 7.
Mr. Chairman? Representative Long?
Speaking on the motion, I believe I support the motion. Now, the bill would retain the new language under the underlying in this new subsection 3 under 138, that would still be in there. Okay, I support that.
We have a motion to delete Section 5 and Section 7 from House Bill 212. And the risk of going through a lot of foolish words here, one way or another, at least in the indicated interest on my part anyway, the discussion, maybe this proper or improper, to delete those, if that will constitute the end of the deletions and approve the bill from the committee or spread it forward to finance whatever action it takes.
On deleting Section 7, what would be the effective date then?
It's 90 days after it's signed by the governor. I'm of course interested in seeing it go into effect, but again, you look at the fiscal note there and look at the time necessary to educate people about the fact that there's been this change, right? I think that's reasonable.
I understand the impact of the fiscal notes you just dropped $120,000. It's obviously not going to be any effective piece of legislation under that scenario. Is there objection?
Object.
Representative Long?
Well, I'm a fairly motion, but I'm interested in hearing the reason for your objection.
already said it while you were out of the room.
Yeah. Oh, that'll get you here.
Mike, you're in the mark.
You want to restate your objection and restate your
part? I don't mind. It seems to me that under the section 5, I have no problem with the second part of this motion, the section 7, removing the effective date. But under section 5, which deals with abuse of relatives in the same household, that you could set up a situation where a relative brought a person, let's say John was my spouse and he beat the stuffings out of me, and I went out to the hospital and got compensated and all that and went back and got the stuffings beat out of me again. That could become a habit, one that it has fell in the past legislature, and I still feel is not necessarily a good one to encourage.
Well, I think that the point raised by Representative Barnes is a good one, at least to the extent that, as far as the members of the household go, I really raised my question on the relative. I mean, if you're a relative by marriage, you can maybe solve that problem, but if you're a son or a daughter or a father with blood relation, there isn't any way you can change that. And it seems unfair, but on the other hand, if people have a dangerous situation to move right back into it, I'm not sure that the state can protect people from that kind of stupidity, for sure. So, I'm agreeing with the motion, but I think that Representative Barnes raised a good point there.
The assault and battery cases, simple or somewhat aggravated assault and battery cases, time and time and time again, you have a domestic situation, a husband or wife, and she moves back and gets beat up again, moves out, she goes back, and it goes on and on and on for seemingly a long period of time. And so both parties get some kind of competent treatment, usually.
Only assault more than two are covered under our statute. The simple assault and battery would not be covered.
No, it would not.
It's
more serious.
It's a more serious.
The pattern, I didn't mean to apply that to that service.
Also, I think the board does review every claim, and I think that they go through very seriously who's innocent and who isn't innocent. If the claimant came back to us a second time, I'm sure the board would want a hearing. After you read the claims and what was awarded and what wasn't awarded, I think you'll see that they try very hard to be very fair, and they don't want to award so that this is an ongoing thing.
Any question on the
question?
Can we vote on the motion? The motion is to eliminate from the bill on page 2, section 5, starting on line 11, from the entire body of section 2, line 16, and then on line 18, section 7 of the bill, which is an effective date. Representative Riska?
Yeah, I vote yes.
Representative Lowell?
Yes.
Representative Coxon?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
No.
And I'll vote yes, that's 4-1. Can I get a motion to Representative Foxy?
There'll need to be a title change, but do you want a motion to move the bill?
Let's have a motion to move the bill.
Representative Mullen makes some good points about wanting to see the final bill before we sign a committee report, but.
That is this one too has to go to another committee, and
We're not adding language, we're simply bracketing in this case. You basically have the final bill in front of you. Is there any discussion?
I'll move the bill. Committee substitute for House Bill 212 with individual recommendations and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? The only objection I would say is instead of having a committee substitute out of it, can we move it as amended? Is that proper? Or do you want to?
It is, although I think.
Mr. Chairman, I would prefer that it be a committee substitute. It's clear that way.
All right.
So we just sign out a committee substitute and then I'll just draft you up.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll move committee substitute for House Bill 212. An act relating to crime victim compensation provided effective date out.
Are you going to send a note to finance or something about the fiscal note? That's what I used to do as a sheriff, just send them a note. You didn't have to have a vote of a committee or anything.
Yeah, we can point that out in the notes and directions to it. Mr. Kent, thanks for coming down and yes, we appreciate the great help with you.
Thank you.
Before you leave, can we get a copy of that little book page you got there? I just would like to have it just for general information.
We could be able to send it to all legislators. There's somewhere on the line that changed and we're going to send it to the.
I noticed you opened it right up to something. If there's nothing further to come before the committee, they will stand adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow.